Hi folks, it's time to start, although I expect a few other folks will be drifting in. And first of all, I want to thank you for being here during your lunch hour. That is really above and beyond the call, and I hope you had a big breakfast or are having an early dinner. And we're very pleased that you chose to come here during your lunch hour. This is about the National Network for Public Health Institutes and about how NNPHI, as it's usually known, is involved in improvements in public health, primarily the public health system, through partnerships and through innovations. And we have, as one of our members here from the Michigan Public Health Institute, two presenters who are going to give specifics about some of the things that their particular institute does in this arena. But before we get started, I wanted to first of all introduce someone that I work with very closely, Dr. Les Speich, who is very involved with some of the projects I'm going to be talking about in a little bit. We have Dr. Patricia Nolan here from the Rhode Island Public Health Institute. We have Whitney Machendi, yes, who's on the staff of NNPHI. And I say that in case you have any questions afterwards that you would like to pose to them. Anyone else here from an institute? Anyone want to have an institute in their state someday? No? Okay. Maybe it will after you hear this talk, yeah. Okay, what is NNPHI? How many of you are familiar with NNPHI? You heard of it? Well, obviously, I'm sorry, and you're, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Emma Ramsey from the Public Health Foundation.
From the Public Health Foundation, very good. Okay, good. So you've been involved in a lot of things that NNPHI has also been involved in. So it's a national membership organization, and it is a membership organization of public health institutes, started a little over 10 years ago. It's about providing and sustaining improved health and wellness for all. Well, that's kind of general, isn't it? Let's talk a little bit more specifically. It was started in 2001, very much the brainchild of a few state institutes that have been successful and were flourishing and doing good work in public health, particularly the Michigan Public Health Institute and the one in California, which is called the Public Health Institute, and the Louisiana Public Health Institute. But there were others starting then as well, and thought, well, my, we can learn more together than we're going to learn separately. And they started talking about creating some kind of a network. So it's set up a 501c3, and it's funded by dues, and so there's certainly this membership, connection membership obligation. But it also runs special projects and has been very much supported by both CDC and RWJF. So what does it do? It really is an independent convener. And by that, we're talking about crossing sectors and dealing with lots of different partners. So there are now 37 members in 27 states. Most of them are nonprofits. A couple are in academic homes. Most of them are state-based, but a few are municipal. And the areas that we're going to be talking about, they're involved in accreditation and performance improvement, evidence-based public health, health equity, health and all policies, leadership and workforce development, research and evaluation. Those are examples. So here's the current map. And I don't know which states you all are from. What states are you from? Ma'am, where are you from?
California.
So California has one. How about you?
Minnesota.
An emerging institute. Don't talk about that. And behind?
California.
Mm-hmm.
District of Columbia.
You have one. You have an institute. And we know CDC, you're just your own institute, by golly. And Public Health Foundation, and we talked about Rhode Island. And then Florida. Florida has an institute as well. So the three that recently were given awards to develop institutes let's see which ones those are. Those are Hawaii, Minnesota, and Vermont. And they just got $10,000, which is helpful, but not a huge amount of money. But they also are assigned a mentor. They're giving technical assistance and training. And they have access to a guide on how to develop and maintain a public health institute. So that's going to help all of them. Before we get into this, partnering with governmental public health agencies. Well, why do public health institutes exist? They really exist because not everything can be done or should be done in a governmental setting. And by having an independent organization that maybe doesn't deal with the same political or budgetary restraints and constraints, that perhaps is better at doing cross-sectoral work, can be a good partner to governmental public health. It is not meant to supplant governmental public health, but rather to enhance the work that governmental public health does. So these are some of the activities that they're currently involved in related to accreditation and performance improvement. Now, mind you, some of them are also involved in very programmatic things. You know, pick your topic, tobacco, violence, whatever, obesity, whatever it might be. But these are things related to the public health system improvement. And so, you know, community health assessments, community health improvement plans, not strategic planning, because I don't think we should plan strategically, but planning, et cetera, et cetera. I think so. You know, maybe a good resource for public health. Yeah. So here's some examples. There's an institute called Health Resources in Action in Boston. They're working in Norwalk, Connecticut, so crossing the state line here, working with the health department, the hospital, 50 key community leaders to define evidence-based strategies for the city of Norwalk and the surrounding communities. Excuse me. In Worcester, Massachusetts, they're working with University Massachusetts Memorial Hospital and the Health Department on a CHIP related to health equity and sustainability. And look at Wisconsin. We know the good work Wisconsin's doing on the county health rankings and the roadmaps for action coming from those rankings. So those are just examples on assessment. Strategic planning. A guide is developed for strategic planning for health impact, funded by CDC. Related to quality improvement. There's a NMPHI Quality Improvement Awards that involves having coaches that work with grantees, with 60 grantees over a two-year period. And two of those coaches are, in fact, housed at the Illinois Public Health Institute and the New Hampshire Institute for Community Health. There also has been an effort called a QI Collaborative and Training for Local Health Departments, and several institutes have gotten involved with this, and you can see which ones they are. Wisconsin, Kansas, Illinois, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Missouri. So again, helping local health departments with training and putting together collaboratives and quality improvement. On performance management, a Michigan Public Health Institute represented by two of our speakers here, facilitation training and TA. North Carolina Institute for Public Health has been running a management academy for a long time. Workforce development, Rhode Island Institute for Public Health is working with the Rhode Island State Health Department on developing a workforce plan. The Public Health Institute here in California does many, many things, but one of their really important things related to workforce is the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health. There's also a history related to accreditation of linking these institutes to the work that's been done at the state level. There are three state-based accreditation programs that are run by public health institutes, North Carolina's, Missouri's, and Michigan's. And you're going to hear more about Michigan's today. Oh, I don't know what that means. Okay. National projects. NMPHI has a staff, hires consultants, and works with its members and others to do many national projects. One of these is called Agency Systems and Community Health Improvement, putting on very important conferences every year and really working with all the public health agencies on national public health performance standards. A lot of training done there and really bringing people together. Again, looking at really across the public health system at system improvement and a lot of work and connections now with the NIFI funding as well. Another project is building partnerships for community health assessment improvement planning. Another one, and this is a really fun one that both Les and I work on very, very much, and that includes a community, it's called COFFEE because it's easy to say it, Community of Practice for Public Health Improvement. Small grants, I mean, they're really small grants, but individualized distance-based QI coaching, also on-site meetings, a lot of training, a lot of TA, helping agencies do quality improvement projects that will prepare them for accreditation. NMPHI also supports Public Health Kicks, which is going to be a database of sharing really stories and data on quality improvement in public health. An example of the kinds of projects that are being funded, and again, over a two-year period, it's 60 different grants and 60 different grantees. And I'd like to say that even though the grants are small, the competition is huge, because it's not about the money. It's about the connections, it's about the networking, it's about the coaching, it's about the training. And these are some of the topics. I won't run through them. You can, the usual suspects. But here's examples of their aim statements. So you can see that this is real work, really making a difference in that particular health department. Most of these are local health departments. There's also tribal and state that are involved. So here's an example. By end of November, 80% of patients that present in the ED and meet testing criteria will receive HIV testing. Very specific. Increase the number of hepatitis C tests performed by 50%. Very specific. You have baselines, and they're going to match it and see if they did it. 90% of environmental hazards investigated within 20 days. Very specific again, making a difference. Part of this, remember I called it coffee because it's much easier to think about it, is having two meetings a year that are called open forums for quality improvement, and they're pretty special. These are about bringing about 250 people together that are interested in the same concept of improving the system to share and learn a lot of innovations, a lot of current grant programs, a lot of cutting-edge stuff going on. The agenda established with input from the participants. When we ask for a planning call, 80 people want to get online and talk about what they want to hear next. Many stakeholders across the sectors. All the national partners are very much involved, academia is involved, CDC for sure, et cetera. And we have a meeting coming up. So December 6th and 7th, 2012, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Be there, be square. We have a fabulous agenda lined up. I sent it off to someone. They said, my God, these are all the hot topics. These are all the hot topics in public health. And one of the things I'm looking forward to, because it will be post-election, is having Jeff Levy from Colorado, from the Trust for America's Health, talk about the future of public health post-election. He's one of our keynotes. We're going to have a lot of smaller sessions as well, a lot of ACS expert roundtables and sessions, and a lot of, well, this is just some examples, performance management, linking accreditation and public health preparedness and public health ready, 28 roundtables on quality improvement, cost efficiencies, incentives for accreditation, et cetera. You too could come to this meeting if you choose to. So if you're interested in the meeting, you can register online. So how can you benefit from the work that NNPHI does with these national programs? There are a lot of resources on the NNPHI website, particularly if you're interested in accreditation, performance improvement, quality improvement, learn what the institutes can do for you, performance improvement toolbox. Oh, here, the Public Health Kicks website is available, but here they're at a booth, 2529, if you're interested in that wonderful resource that's going to be there for exchange of everything that's going on in quality improvement and public health. You can also sign up for NNPHI emails. Whitney.
I have here the sign-up sheet, and I'll leave it in the front where we can pass it around to everyone.
Why don't you go ahead and pass it around? Yeah.
And then there's the five, your name and your email, your organization, and then there's a brief description of the five newsletters that you offer. You can sign up for one or all five. If you're looking for a general newsletter and you want just one, I highly suggest the top five will be this. And that's every Wednesday you'll get our top five discussing announcements, and that's everything from funding opportunities to recent news from our members.
Remember that NNPHI is a granting organization in many projects, and so you might want to see what they have to say and be on the list. I think Whitney also has a handout related to NNPHI and quality improvement, I think.
Yeah, I have here, this is a topical brief that we wrote as a conclusion of our multi-state learning collaborative program, and this topical brief in particular is about public health institutes and their impact on quality improvement.
There are many other briefs available on the website, including things like performance management system briefs and all kinds of good stuff that's a little bit hard to find, so it's a good resource. Not some you find everywhere. So that's kind of the overview of NNPHI and some of the current things that are going on with NNPHI. And now we're going to hear from one of our really powerful and one of the earliest, if not the earliest, institutes in the country, one that I've been impressed with for a long time, the Michigan Public Health Institute. that has been going for, what, 20 years or something? It's very, very vibrant. In order of this, that they're going to speak, I'm going to speak to Jesse first, introduce Jesse. Jesse Jones is a program coordinator for the Center for Healthy Communities at the Michigan Public Health Institute. Now, remember that I said that the Michigan Public Health Institute is the home for accreditation for the local agencies for their state accreditation in Michigan. That's the lady in charge. So she runs what happens at that accreditation that Michigan has. She's also been very involved with these projects and has worked with NMPHI on a previous venture called the Multi-State Learning Collaborative for a good 5 years, I think. We've been working on that one. She received her Master's in Public Administration from Michigan State University. And after Jesse talks to you a little bit about accreditation in the Public Health Institute, Julia Heaney is going to speak next. She's a director of the Center for Healthy Communities at the Michigan Public Health Institute, responsible for scientific, managerial, and fiscal integrity. I'm glad that you have fiscal integrity for all the projects in the program. She's a well-known researcher, investigator, a research scientist. An example of her projects are CDC racial and ethnic approaches to community health. She utilizes community-based participatory approach to research and evaluation. She received her doctorate at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jesse.
Thank you, Lee. And thanks, everybody, for coming today. I appreciate seeing your faces here. So as Lee said, we're going to kind of talk about how MPHI has been involved in building accreditation capacity in health departments, both state and local and tribal and interstate. So MPHI has been involved in activities that build capacity for state and local public health departments for more than a decade, starting with our role as a partner in Michigan's local public health accreditation program, which is currently in its 14th year of operation. Based on our work with the accreditation program in Michigan, MPHI participated in all three rounds of the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, or MLC, partnering with state and local health departments in that project and working to inform the development of the National Public Health Accreditation Program, and also working to build capacity within our local health departments for quality improvement through the accreditation program as well as training and technical assistance and QI projects. Beyond our work with MLC, MPHI has continued to provide facilitation, training, and technical assistance for quality improvement and performance management, as well, as well as in FAB or national accreditation prerequisites. So, additionally, MPHI developed with Deborah Toos, who's the performance improvement manager in Michigan, and Kasuma Matamala. And just released this year the second edition of Embracing Quality Improvement in Public Health, a Practitioner's QI Guidebook. And actually the first edition of that guidebook was developed through Multi-State Learning Collaborative 2. So today we're going to discuss a few of these activities that we've done and why it makes sense for us as a public health institute to be involved in this work. So let's start there. So why should public health institutes be involved in this type of work? This infographic we developed by taking the missions and visions from both NNPHI and MPHI. And a few key words to pull out here. Public health institutes seek to improve the public's health, building capacity, and translating scientific research into practice. So that is why we think that we have a role here in taking QI or performance management and those those frameworks and translating it into ways that public health departments can use it. In addition, public health institutes are situated in a unique position between government, academia, and the private sector. We serve as a neutral convener, and we act as a translator, as I said, science and policy to practice, practice into science and policy, and policy to science and practice. Sorry. So two of the activities that we've been involved in with to provide support for accreditation and preparation are, like I said earlier, the guidebook, Embracing Quality in Local Public Health, a Practitioner's Guide to Quality Improvement, and Community Health Assessment and Health Improvement Planning with local health departments in the state. So let's start with the guidebook. This is the cover of the first edition of the guidebook. So have any of you, or did any of you hear about the guidebook? Or, over here? Anybody use the guidebook? Always fewer, but it's a good thing that there's awareness out there, at least. Some quick statistics about the first edition of the guidebook. And some information about it. The first edition was posted on Michigan's accreditation website as a free resource for health departments and practitioners across the country, as well as available for purchase in hard copy. The online version alone was downloaded more than 105,000 times, which is great, as well as distributed across the country by partner organizations such as NNPHI, NACHO, ASTO, other organizations, and state and local health departments. And it was used by public health quality improvement novices and experts alike. After using the guidebook as a tool and resource in our training and technical assistance that we've done, we recognized that there were some gaps that it would be useful to address through a second edition. To ensure we weren't alone in this thinking, we evaluated the guidebook, which was supported by NNPHI, the evaluation, and the results of that evaluation furthered the idea that a revision would be useful and embraced. So through the evaluation, we collected information about how folks have used the guidebook, who has used the guidebook, what the users have achieved using the guidebook, what are the strengths and limitations of the guidebook. And we did that through key informant interviews with six partners in the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, as well as a survey. It was sent to 445 MLC participants and other guidebook users that were identified both through talking with partner organizations and through those interviews that we did. And some things we heard through the evaluation was that the guidebook is an excellent resource for public health agencies implementing QI and has been used as a teaching tool with health departments, and also that it's a sensible, necessary, practical, and living document that staff refer to and understand and refer to when in doubt. So we were very excited to hear that when we did our evaluation. However, it's not a perfect tool, and so we also heard about some areas for improvement. So the areas for improvement that we identified through the evaluation included it would be useful to have more examples of how QI has been done in public health throughout the entire guidebook, an expansion on the importance of using data in QI, more guidance on writing an aim statement, which always seems simple, but when health departments that we've worked with have gotten into it, it's much more difficult in practice than it is in theory, more detail on QI tools and how they're used in public health, and information on developing and sustaining a quality or a culture of quality, and how QI fits within the national public health landscape, specifically accreditation. So to ensure that we stayed true to the intended purpose of the guidebook, we developed the following guiding principles prior to starting in on revisions. So we wanted to make sure that the guidebook met the need of QI novices, that it stressed the involvement of all staff in QI activities, that it was user-focused, accessible, simple, and clear, that it was directly and clearly applicable to a public health context, that it was usable as a teaching tool, that it was evidence-based, up-to-date, and in line with available data, and that it described the relationship between QI and accreditation. So there is the second edition of the guidebook. Has anybody seen the second edition? Well, it is also available on our website. It's no longer on the accreditation website, but it's on the Office of Accreditation and Quality Improvement website. And I do have a small card if anybody's interested in how to get to that that I can provide. So let's see. I asked again. Let's see. Has anybody read it? I think you're the only one that raised your hand. But we've heard through our distribution, people that we've sent it to, that it's, you know, very useful, and it's definitely improved after our revision, so we're glad to hear that. So the revision work was supported by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we, along with, like I said, Deborah Tews and Kasuma Matamala, made extensive additions and improvements to the second edition, including several new chapters. So we started out with a chapter on quality fundamentals, so what QI looks like for public health. We expanded information on how to involve customers, clients, and stakeholders, including a sample customer satisfaction survey instrument and protocol. We added a chapter on organizing a QI project, assembling and managing a team, and provided a team charter template that folks can use for their QI work. We added lessons from the field and case study highlights to the PDSA chapter. We provided more information on creating SMART aim statements with real-world examples of public health aim statements and a SMART aim statement worksheet. We expanded and provided more practical information on the importance of data and measuring improvement. We provided step-by-step guides for tools commonly used in public health work and a tool selector chart to facilitate using QI tools for public health practitioners. And then another big addition was a chapter on building a culture of quality in public health, which provides a definition on how to build and sustain a culture of quality, how QI accreditation and performance management fit together, as well as practical ideas and strategies to make quality a part of everyday public health work. A popular aspect of the first edition was our case studies, and so we expanded those. The first edition was four case studies from Michigan. We now have expanded those, including health departments from across the U.S. with different lessons learned in different program areas that they addressed in their QI, as well as a case study selector chart. Since there is a lot of information there, we didn't want it to get too overwhelming, so we have a little matrix, it's a pretty good size matrix, but so that they can select what's applicable to them and not have to wade through everything to find what they need. And then we also have information on how to conduct a basic evaluation and key differences between evaluation and QI and how evaluation and QI can work together to guide improvements. So additionally, we conducted a peer review process for the second edition to make sure that we were capturing what other practitioners from across the country who have been involved in this work have found as well. So it was reviewed by representatives from local health departments and state health departments, as well as tribal health departments, QI experts and consultants, as well as individuals from FAB, NNPHI, NACHO, ASTO, NALBO, and the National Indian Health Board. So the second edition was released this year in April. As I said, it's available on our accreditation and quality improvement website. It's also available in hard copy. It's already been downloaded more than 700 times, and we've sold or distributed approximately 400 hard copies. We have more requests for copies coming in weekly. And it's been utilized the country in at least 28 states so far that we've heard from. So it's exciting. We've also built an ongoing evaluation of the second edition via survey to users who have provided us with their email address. And so far, it's been used by people with all types of QI experience prior to using the guidebook, from beginners to experts. Overall, folks are very satisfied, with more than 90% saying they're satisfied or very satisfied with the guidebook, the second edition. And they've used the guidebook in a way that reflects those guiding principles that we set out with when we were revising the guidebook. So nearly half indicated that they've used it as a QI reference. 35% used it during QI work, and 30% together, so those second two categories when added together, have used it in QI training, demonstrating that there's utility in practice. It's a document that can be picked up and used by practitioners in their work and also used as a tool for training. So, and we regularly use the guidebook as well. We use it for training and technical assistance. We use the first edition during our MLC project with 16 health departments. We're using the second edition now in our work with the State Health Department, building capacity there. We work with public health programs across the state in training and technical assistance and use it, and in statewide training that we'll be providing as well. We've disseminated it as a resource, and we also use it in our own QI work internally. We've started practicing what we preach, and so it's been a useful document there as well with our staff. And that is it. Guidebook, and I'm going to hand it over to Julie now to talk about our activities with health assessment and health improvement planning.
Well, Julia's coming up. I want to say that the guidebook is so unique in having true public health examples. I don't think you'll find it anywhere else. It's really just this amazing resource. I think we're all appreciative to Michigan for pulling it together.
Well, thank you, and thank you again for taking some time this afternoon to hear a little bit about this work. As you could hear in Jesse's presentation, our orientation as a public health institute is really toward taking best practices, scientific evidence, and making it practical in real-world public health applications. That's very routinely sort of our goal and objective in our work. How can we take the science and turn it into practice, and how can we help practitioners use science in a way that's effective and enhances their work? And that is part of our work with health assessment and health improvement planning as well, which I'm going to talk about. So we have been, MPHI has been supporting local and tribal public health agencies in completing their prerequisites for FAB accreditation. And one of the first things that we have to do when we start talking with agencies about health assessment and health improvement planning is what these terms mean and what they are, and how MPHI or a public health institute can be helpful in implementing them successfully. And what we talk about is that health assessment and health improvement planning are about engaging community partners, collecting data about health, broadly defined, using data to identify priorities, looking to the evidence to identify strategies, and working together to improve health. Typically, the folks that we're working with have those the middle set of three bullets down, clearly conceptualized in their mind that this is part of the process, that we need to collect data about health and we need to use that data in some way to put in place strategies that will make things better. But one of the challenges that we often come across is around the first and the last bullet. How do we successfully do this collaboratively together, both in terms of the assessment process and also the implementation process? And I think that as a neutral entity, public health institutes are kind of uniquely situated to help facilitate true collaboration in a community process. One of our other roles when we start talking with agencies about health assessment and health improvement planning, they're often coming to us because of FAB accreditation or because of IRS requirements. That's sort of what is predicating their interest in the topic or renewed interest in the topic in Michigan. And so one of our roles is to help them think beyond these important requirements that are out there that they need to satisfy. Why is health assessment and health improvement planning important? Because partner agencies aren't necessarily that concerned about being successful in FAB accreditation or helping hospitals meet their IRS requirements. They are interested in being supportive in achieving the common vision and mission of agencies that are out there in communities to help people. So one of our roles is helping public health departments and their hospital partners think about how these processes have value outside of meeting a requirement. So we talk a lot about how silos within public health and healthcare are not working. They're not effectively addressing the most significant threats to health that we face right now as a country. We talk about how the community health problems that they're facing are too big for anyone to confront alone. A hospital within a community is not going to move the obesity rate all by itself, neither is a health department. But what can you do if you are all moving together in the same direction toward the same goal with common strategies that you've come together and decided make sense for your community? And we talk a lot about the reality of not having enough resources to solve every problem at once or to use strategies that don't work. Everyone is under pressure to be more efficient, to be more effective, to let go of practices that don't work, to know what practices do and don't work. So a lot of our dialogue with agencies as we start to work with them is around kind of expanding their thinking about why health assessment and health improvement planning have value and how to engage other partners in that process by talking about it in kind of this comprehensive, big picture way. We provide, as MPHI, several different services to agencies that are doing health assessment and health improvement planning. Sometimes we're involved in a piece of it, sometimes we're involved in all of it, really just depending on what they need and where they are at the moment. One of the things that we provide that I think is particularly helpful is neutral facilitation. Oftentimes within a community, within some of our communities, this is the first time that some partners have ever worked together. And so there's always turf, there's worries about some agency taking over work in a particular area. You know, those boundaries can be hard to navigate when they're first coming together to try to work on common health problems. And so as a neutral party, we can come in without any of those biases and think about what's going to work best, what makes the most sense, what's the data-driven approach, or where is the expertise in the community, where is the capacity in the community, and we can talk about that from a neutral perspective. And I think that is very helpful to community members. The facilitation piece of it, I think, is huge also. Often public health agencies, they are so short-staffed. They have so few people that are doing so much work, and they don't have someone on staff who's a trained facilitator who really understands how to get a process from A to B. Where are our goals, and how can we work together to get there? They might not have that capacity, and so we can be helpful in that way. Sometimes what we provide is training. Sometimes what they want to know is just get some basic information or share information with our staff, and so we can provide that. We also provide technical assistance. So sometimes agencies want help with survey administration or survey data analysis, things like that, so we can be helpful in that way too. Or we can be helpful with conducting focus groups or, you know, incorporating the community voice into a health assessment process. We also provide support in identifying evidence-based practices. We just did a training with seven tribal health agencies on identifying evidence-based practices and the process of modifying evidence-based practices based on culture and kind of how to think about that and approach that. So we can be helpful in that way. And I think that overall what we provide is a way of thinking about health assessment and health improvement planning in a way that's very local. So we're always coming in from the perspective that there's no one perfect model or tool out there. There's wonderful models and tools out there, but they always have to be adapted to where the community is and what they need, and so we can be helpful in thinking about that. One of the ways that we operate when we're doing health assessment and health improvement planning with communities is that we come into the situation knowing that we need to understand the view of the partners and all the partners that are around the table. And what we've discovered is that their views on what health assessment and health improvement planning are vary quite a bit. So we might hear that health assessment is about meeting requirements, so IRS requirements, FAB requirements. We might hear that it's about documenting health status in a community. We might hear that it's about driving change. Those are very different perspectives on what we're coming together to try to do. And so it's important that we understand where different partners are in their thinking about it. We hear different things about who health assessment involves. Some partners might come to the table feeling that it involves those who are paying for it. Some might think about involving system partners, and some might go the next step and think about involving community members in the process. We also recognize that that different partners will think differently about what health assessment should result in, with some thinking that it involves in a hefty document that you'll put on your shelf and be able to show to the IRS when they come knocking on your door. Some will think that it should result in a better understanding of community health issues, and some will think that it's about moving from silos to collective impact. So because there is such diversity in perspectives and ideas about what health assessment, health improvement planning are and what they mean and what they should do, it's important for us to listen first before we figure out what we're going to do. In all of our work, and certainly in this work, we think about how it connects with our mission and vision as an institute. We're very mission and vision driven at MPHI. And some of the key components of our mission and vision involve carrying the voice of communities, advancing the application of science, building capacity to reduce disparities, and supporting effective communication between stakeholders. And so we think pretty explicitly about how each of these ideas align with how we're approaching our work with communities. How are we making sure that the community voice is represented? How are we making sure that disparities is part of the conversation? Are we looking to the best science that's out there, the best tools that are out there, and figuring out how to modify those based on what the particular community needs? We also are oriented towards selecting methods and tools that meet the community where they are and support them in taking the next step. So when we discover where a community is or where different partners are along these various spectrum, we think not only about how to get them what they need based on where they are, but how to maybe push a little bit to take them to the next step. Like scaffolding, I have a background in child development, so I kind of think about it that way, scaffolding. Why we're helpful, or why I hope we're helpful. We try to make sure that health assessment and health improvement plans align with standards. So we look to FAD standards, make sure that when we're working with agencies, we're kind of covering what needs to be there. We look at the IRS forms, make sure we're covering what needs to be there. We support engaging traditional and non-traditional public health system partners. So, you know, we bring that public health egg diagram to the table and have processes for helping folks think through who is here and who is not here and who needs to be here and how do we engage them. We have a big toolbox and an understanding of the evidence base, but our approach is adaptable. So we try to stay up to speed on the wonderful resources that are out there at the national level on health assessment, health improvement planning, but we're always thinking about what the community needs and how to adapt it to fit where they are. We operate like organizers who like data. So we're most of us have some sort of background in some kind of science, and so we're all sort of interested in data, interested in understanding community problems using data, but we also know that things don't change unless the people and the agencies and the systems who have the capacity to drive that change are at the table and ready to work. So we have to bring sort of the skills of organizers to the process as well. You know, I think that we've learned that nothing is more important than the process, that thinking through a process that will work for the partners that you have around the table is perhaps the most important piece of health improvement planning and community health assessment. Again, we're perceived as neutral, and again, we try to listen first. When I talk about health assessment and health improvement planning, this is one of the questions that I get. What tools do you like? What tools do you use? And so these are some that we look to very frequently. The CDC's Principles of Community Engagement was produced in the 90s. It's still a fabulous resource. We use the MAP Network and Clearinghouse a lot. There's about a million wonderful tools on there. The Community Toolbox is very, very helpful. Technology of participation out of the Institute of Cultural Affairs, if you have some money to get someone trained in facilitation, send them there. They have wonderful facilitation training. It's very applicable. The staff that I've sent that, you know, they come back and they can apply it the next week to what they do. So it's a really great training. And also CDC's Community Guide, SAMHSA's National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices, and ARC's Innovations Exchange are great resources to use for looking at evidence-based strategies.
And that's what we have.
That's pretty exciting. Do you have questions for our panelists? While you're thinking about that, I'm going to ask a question. How many agencies are you or have you been working with?
For community health assessment, health improvement planning?
Mm-hmm.
10.
Mm-hmm. Are they all in Michigan?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But you're available to go outside of Michigan?
Sure.
Just wanted to make that plug. Okay, good. Any questions for our panel?
What
Dr. Miller? The question is, what is the business model that supports the public health improvement work that they're doing at MPHI?
I wish we had a business model.
You can stand up to answer if you like.
Okay. MPHI is fully funded on soft money. All of the resources that we use for our work are grants. Grants and contracts. Our largest funding source is the Michigan Department of Community Health, and they've been a wonderful supporter of this type of work in Michigan. But we're, you know, we always look for what's out there and what we can use to support the work or to partner with others to implement the work. With the IRS requirements, we try to stay in tune with which hospitals are ready to partner with public health agencies and to be supportive of those relationships as we can. But a formal business model we do not have.
Does that mean when you go to a local health department that has a problem, you have to go find separate grant money in order to work with them?
The health departments that we've worked with on community health assessment, health improvement planning, and strategic planning usually have a grant from another source, like we talked about a little bit earlier in the presentation, or they have a collaboration with a hospital through which they've found some resources to fund this work. The Michigan Department of Community Health does not support at the local level the completion of these plans. They used to. There used to be funding there for it, but that's long gone. There definitely are hospitals and health departments that are collaborating in Michigan to complete the community health needs assessment or community health assessment and have one common document that they're looking to. Any new partnership is going to have challenges as it gets off the ground, and I think that one of the ways that MPHI is helpful when we're involved is just as that neutral party that can bring the conflicts, the differences in perspective to the table and to try to figure out where that common ground is. That, you know, in one community that we worked with in particular, there were five hospital systems involved working with a health department. And so imagine how many perspectives we had around the table and what we were doing, what we were trying to accomplish. And, you know, one of the most important things I think we did early on was to work with them in figuring out where their common ground really was, and to have language around vision and mission that we could come back to every single time we got together to say, this is what this is about, this is what we're working on together, to try to stay focused on the big picture. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but that was where my brain went.
Do you have any other questions? Yes.
How do you partner with other state public health institutions? Who do you partner with other state public health institutions?
Do you want to answer that? Well, you can answer it from your perspective, then I'll talk about it from the MPHI perspective.
Okay. There have been times when MPHI has worked with other public health institutes. We are one of the mentor public health institutes for one of the emerging institutes. I always appreciate having the opportunity to be trained together, to work together through the MLC. We learn quite a lot from each other, but I think that you can speak to that.
Yeah. The network is quite vibrant, actually. There is an annual meeting of the institutes in May of every year in New Orleans. That is one way they convene, but they also convene on projects where they're working on things together. And in the area that we've been involved in, by we I mean the three of us have been involved in accreditation and quality improvement, all the institutes know who else is working on this stuff. And they do communicate with each other, they support each other, and they're involved with each other. Michigan has been great as a mentor. I was involved early on in the development of the Colorado Public Health Institute, and Colorado Foundation for Public Health and Environment is the name of it, and the director of Michigan came out to talk to that board to say, here's how you might look at growing, here's how you might look at your sustainability. Very, very generous with their resources and help. The other thing the institutes do is help with, oh, you're doing a 501c3, let me show you how my template worked. Oh, you're looking at hiring and needing job descriptions for a director. They share that. So a lot of that institutional stuff as well. In fact, even some accounting things they've helped each other with. So both programmatic and in infrastructure, the networks has really been very helpful with creating those relationships that have endured now for some years. And, you know, the three new ones, the Minnesota, Hawaii, and Vermont, that'll be coming in will immediately have sort of arms that will gather around them to say, we're going to help you out here. So any other questions?
Yeah.
That's the national network. That is the umbrella. Mm-hmm.
It's called yeah. The National Network?
Mm-hmm. National Network of Public Health Institutes. And it's located in New Orleans.
In New Orleans,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Any other questions? I help Minnesotans just go, go, go. And I didn't acknowledge that you would get Georgia here. Georgia has an institute, yeah. Thinking of CDC sitting by itself. It's in the state of Georgia, which has an institute. Yeah. Georgia does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They've done some very good work. Absolutely. Yeah, and then thank you to our panelists.
Thank you.